15, 2005, Wednesday. And House Trade and Economic Development Committee will come to order. And the first agenda is a public hearing on House Bill 3123. All right, I'd like to call at this time David Blum. David Blum and Ron Fox.
Hi,
House Bill 3123 requires the Oregon Economic Community Development Department to adopt standards, objectives, and criteria for providing financial assistance to community-based incubation centers, and it defines what a business incubation center is.
All right. With that, Mr. David Plum.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify. For the record, my name is David Blum, B-L-U-M. I'm the asset manager for Peninsula Community Development Corporation, a nonprofit 501c3 serving the neighborhoods of North Portland. We are in the process of planning for the development of Oregon's first small business incubator, and I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 3123 and just to provide a very brief background on what business incubators do nationally. I'll skip definitions and some more detail just to tell you that the National Business Incubator Association is a national trade organization, represents about 1,000 business incubators around the United States, and they've reported the following statistics. 84% of the small businesses that graduate from the communities stay in the communities, providing a return to their investors. In 2001 alone, incubators assisted more than 35,000 startup companies. These companies provide full-time employment for nearly 82,000 workers and generated annual earnings in excess of $7 billion. NBIA, National Business Incubator Association, estimates that incubator client and graduate companies have created about 500,000 jobs since 1980. Every 50 jobs created by an incubator client generates approximately 25 more jobs in the same community. For every dollar of estimated public investment provided to the incubator, clients and graduates of business incubators generate approximately $30 in local tax revenue alone. That's a 30-to-1 multiplier. Publicly supported incubators create jobs at a cost of about $1,100 each, whereas other publicly supported job creation mechanisms cost about $10,000 per job created. Business incubators reduce the risk of small business failures. About 87% of all graduate firms of business incubators in the United States are still in business. Oregon needs a business incubator in as many communities as possible. Today in the state of Washington, thanks to statewide legislation which began in the late 1990s, there are 7 currently operating successful business incubators between Spokane, Aberdeen, throughout the state of Washington. In Oregon today, there are virtually none. There are small organizations that have been attempting to do business incubation, but the track record has been very, very spotty. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify today in support of House Bill 3123. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Vice Chair Mulkey.
I think Representative Olson, you have a question also? What's your call?
Okay, and Vice Chair Mulkey, defer to the first Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, is it a Plum?
Plum.
Blum?
Blum.
Blum. With a B?
Yes.
Thank you. This is very interesting. I've never heard of this before, but do we have your testimony? I was trying to find in this paper we got the facts that you gave us regarding Oregon.
It's on the fourth and fifth page. Actually, it's on the back page, excuse me. The very last page under the graph where it says benefits, number eight, benefits.
Uh-huh.
I was just recapping what these various benefits are and why business incubators have been started in the United States and how successful they have been. Many of them have come from statewide legislation, I might add.
And just to follow up, to understand this definition, mm-hmm. That NBIA gave on page 3, I guess it is, to understand this, could you give us an example of how one of these begins and grows?
Sure.
Just to make up one if necessary, because I don't understand
it. A very specific example. In Tacoma, Washington, as you drive north on I-5 the next time you're on the way to Seattle, look to your right and you'll see a brand new 28,000 square foot Class A office building with the word incubator on it. That's the William M. Factory Business Incubator, funded in part by the state of Washington. It has 36 small businesses paying above market rent, clustered around the construction industry, principally women-owned and minority-owned businesses. It took them 15 years of struggle to get to that point. It is so successful they have a waiting list and are about to break ground next door to that building on a brand-new 40,000-square-foot Phase 2 building. That small business incubator supplies business services, accounting, marketing, financial advice to small businesses who might otherwise be working out of a back bedroom, a garage, in some small industrial park, and maybe has a success rate of 10 or 20%, whereas about 92% of the small businesses in that business incubator graduate within 18 months and go on to some other market rate location where they grow their business to a larger volume. That took 15 years of effort, and the state of Washington was instrumental in funding that project.
So, follow up?
Yes, follow up.
Basically, first it takes someone to come forth with the capital.
Yes.
Is there an amount of capital that's required to launch such a program?
That small business incubator project was funded by U.S. Bank, the state of Washington, the Paul Allen Foundation, and a number of other donors to get the land and building going. It cost them about $3.5 million. They borrowed about $2 million of that and serviced that debt from fees that they collect from the tenants. So every tenant there pays rent and pays fees for services, and they grow out within the 18 months to go off and become a real live standalone profitable business. It's quite difficult to get in, it's quite competitive to get in, and they spend a lot of time mentoring their businesses so that they are successful.
Thank you.
Okay. Vice Chair Moakley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm very interested in this model. Certainly, we all know that technical support is very important, and here in Oregon we have a wide variety of ways to support small business. So this adds the element of the synergism of co-location, if you will, of other firms. And I'm wondering if there's been any kind of research into what types of small businesses this is really useful for. I mean, some small business may do very well starting out of the garage or out of the home office, because co-locating with other firms may have no particular value, especially if they have to pay, as you mentioned, I think you said above market rent in this facility. So are you finding that the successful incubator models are primarily venture capital funded high tech software firms, or are they a whole variety of people making pies and running it out of this type of Class A office building, or when does this really seem to add a lot of value?
Thank you for the question, Representative Merkley. That is exactly the $1,000 question that really needs to be answered. When we went to Tacoma with our board and took tours of the facility, we were fascinated as to why they focus strictly on the construction industry. We really could not understand why that industry and not technology. And the answer was that after studying metals, wood, fabrication, food products, and a whole variety of industries, they decided that construction companies, very small and emerging companies, could benefit most from co-locating. So somebody who does surveying, who's located in a building with someone who does landscaping, can share bid information, can share opportunities to learn from each other about how they put bids together, what their marketing plans are, what their financial margins are. We don't know yet for North Portland what that industry sector will be. It's most likely not technology. It certainly could be food service. It certainly could be two or three industries co-located in a facility, but the model in Tacoma has been enormously successful. They attract construction-related businesses from Bellingham to Olympia, and that synergy of having them in the same building, in addition to being co-located with the United States Department of Transportation bidding office, which is a tenant in the building, allows them immediate access and knowledge on how to bid for public work. And it's just unique to the construction industry. We're not yet sure which industry or industries should be located together. But that is the key question, in my mind, about making this successful.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Dallin.
Yes, with this capitalization of the incubator, what percentage of the capitalization was public money? If we were to replicate that, how much would Chairman Lem have to ask Ways and Means to come up with?
In the $3.5 million budget in Tacoma, my understanding was that it was less than 20%, that the debt was about 50% of the total capital requirement, the rest was granted money, foundation source money, and that they actually received from the state less than 20% of the $3.5 million, so less than $700,000 for that building. That is an extremely expensive building that they built, very, very highly technology-oriented, which they think is important to the success of their firms. They spent well over $120 a square foot to build the building, but I think here in Oregon we could probably build a building for maybe 20 or 30% less than that. But we would not be looking in the future for any more than about a 20% public contribution. If the project can't pay its own way and service debt from a commercial banking source, there's really no reason to build the project.
Follow up,
Mr. Chair.
This was done through the equivalent of the Economic Development and Community Development Commission in Washington. It was a similar organization to what we have.
Yes, they created legislation, and that legislation then led in subsequent years to actual funding for this incubator and the other six incubators throughout the state of Washington. And we can make a copy of that legislation and the background of how they did that, what the mechanism is, to you in a day or so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Blum, could you tell me why you picked out Portland State University and the University of Oregon?
We have graduate students, and a gentleman sitting in the row behind me, Patrick Eberhardt, is a second-year Master's of Business Administration student at Portland State because they have a very strong outreach program to work with nonprofit organizations and agencies as part of their school requirement to graduate with an MBA from Portland State. So I went to the chair of the department. They offered four second-year MBA students to help us do this research, and we brought them on board as credit course qualified. We get their research expertise, and they get credit for helping us. What we're trying to do is write a white paper, which we'll make available to you. We've already spent a year studying this, so that when we get ready to execute the project, we've done all the necessary research to make sure that it is successful. And that's why we went to those schools to find students to help us do the research.
A follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Mr. Baum, could I ask you why you keep saying nonprofit? I can't imagine all those businesses being in construction nonprofit, even though most of our small businesses are nonprofit at some time in their lives.
All the business tenants, let me clarify this, Representative Nelson, are for-profit private businesses.
Okay.
They go out every day to work to make money for themselves. The organization that developed the business incubator and that runs the business incubator itself is a nonprofit organization. So in this case, we as a nonprofit would be the sponsor of the project. But the tenants that we expect to come there and pay rent and pay for the services are all privately owned small businesses looking to make profit.
I feel better. Thank you.
Mr. Blum, already state has some programs such as a small business center. Mostly the office located in the community college.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you think this is not overlapping with the current program we have?
We went to Portland Community College and studied the small business outreach program there as well as at Portland State. And those programs are basically in response to a small business coming to them asking for advice. That's very, very different than a physical building where small businesses are co-located and where, as a requirement of being there, they must provide monthly financial statements. They must sit down every month and go through their marketing plan. They must provide the accounting information and attend classes as a part of the contract to be in the building, and that way there's much more of a responsibility of the small business to learn from and provide information than simply calling up Portland Community College and saying on a particular day, I need help today writing a marketing plan. That's not what a business incubator does. A business incubator is extremely rigorous, hands-on management of the business. And if you don't do those things, you can't stay in the incubator. So it's a contract where the small business must do certain things monthly in order to remain as a tenant, and hopefully those things help the small business stay in business. As everyone here knows, there's a high rate of failure in the United States among small and emerging businesses. Business incubators have proven to be the only successful model to make sure small businesses don't make certain mistakes over and over again, and they have an 87% graduation rate. It's also quite difficult to get into a business incubator if it's run properly. Anyone can call up Lane Community College or Portland Community College and go and take a class or get free advice. This is a different relationship because the people who own the small businesses are paying for the services.
Thanks. So, and did you say you are going to provide us the copy of the Washington State Office Business Incubators?
Yes.
Okay, we'd like to get as soon as possible.
We'll also provide you, Chairman Lim, with letters that we have from Portland State University to show you how the small business outreach program there is very excited about providing the business management services to the business incubator should we be successful in developing it. They would be actually the manager of the business incubator program, so there would not be overlap between what they do. This is a place to do it with clients who are paying for that service.
Okay, so how much are that the business incubators in Washington State they are getting from the state fund?
That's a very good question, Chairman Lim. I don't know today how much has been appropriated for this current biennium. I know that the seven incubators share a distribution amount directly from the state of Washington, but I don't know the exact amount.
And one more question I have. Since you are going to have non-profit organization, is that true? Is the business incubator is going to be a non-profit organization?
We are currently and have always been a 501c3 nonprofit. As the sponsor of this project, we will probably be the manager of the project initially, but the project itself, as a standalone organization would be a non-profit organization, yes.
Okay, so as a non-profit organization, do you think you can take the tax dollars for that organization?
You know, I have not looked into that. I don't know. I just know that based on the national models, if you look on the second page, chart one, it shows incubator sponsors, 19% have no sponsors, 25% are academic institutions, 16% are government entities, 15% are economic development agencies. So I don't know if a 501c3 is legally allowed to receive that, but we haven't really gotten that far.
Well, I think they can. Yeah, sure. It just depends on how the arrangement goes.
All right. And if it is not, then some other agency would step up and fulfill that role. Our job here is to create awareness at the state level of why this state needs to do what Washington State has done, which is get behind the idea so when there is a specific project to finance, part of that can be brought to your attention for whatever assistance the state of Oregon could provide.
Okay, so how long the Washington State has been in existence of this program?
I believe it's 8 years, could be 10 years.
That has been very successful.
Extremely successful. There are 7 operating small business incubators from Spokane to Aberdeen. The largest one, the most successful one, is the one I mentioned, the William Factory Business Incubator in Tacoma.
Okay. Representing Nelson.
Thank you. I'm intrigued with this idea, Mr. Chair. Mr. Blum, what have been some of the challenges of these 7 in Washington? What have been the biggest issues to overcome? And do you have a copy of the Washington 2000 legislation that established this incubator program?
We definitely have a copy of the legislation, the full text. I can provide that to you in a couple days. My understanding, the biggest challenge is getting the mix of services correctly. As Representative Merkley was saying, if somebody is in technology or somebody is producing food, their need for accounting, marketing, financial services are different depending on their sophistication, the ownership, the history of the business.
So that's been the main problem.
Right. Most of the services in Tacoma are provided by retired business executives from SCORE, the federal program where people who own businesses then who retire are volunteering their services. So instead of paying an accountant to sit there at $100 an hour or whatever, the SCORE volunteer himself is the person that reviews and admits the prospective applicants. The SCORE volunteer sits there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever schedule, and works on the marketing plans, reviews their monthly financials, helps them do the bookkeeping, helps them apply for loans from lenders. That's an excellent source that they've been able to tap, which the United States Small Business Administration is obviously very excited about because it places SCORE volunteers exactly where they need to be, which is working directly with small businesses.
Okay. At this time, I'd like to call the Representative Smith, and thank you very much for coming, and a good friend of ours.
Committees of 4, I think, or 5.
Welcome, Representative.
Welcome. I feel like I'm in a little seat here. Down. Good morning. For the record, I'm Oregon State Representative Greg Smith. I have the distinct pleasure of serving Union, Wallowa, Morrow, and Umatilla County over in Northeast Oregon. I'm here today to share my support for House Bill 3123 for multiple reasons. First of all, simply because it's the right thing to do. Second of all is because, to be very candid, Representative Hansen asked me to support this, and I think any time that we in a bipartisan manner can step up and support small business, we ought to do that. Very quickly, I want to recognize two gentlemen behind us, Mike Salzgiver and Ron Fox. These are two very, very talented individuals for the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. And I want you to know, for the record, that I truly know they support all business and industry in the state, particularly small business. And I know they're very cognizant of the fact that today is Small Business Day, and that 98% of all businesses in Oregon are small. And so I appreciate them being here. And I appreciate you, Chair Lim, and Vice Chair Broome and Vice Chair Merkley for allowing this issue to be discussed on such an important and symbolic day. With that said, I think one of the biggest struggles right now in the state of Oregon in terms of economic development is making economic development relevant, making it so it does what it needs to do for those who need it. And when you look at Oregon's economy, the fact is small business owners, those folks outside and to the left and to the right are the folks who stabilize Oregon's economy. Those are the folks who pay significant, the largest portion of the tax bill in the state of Oregon. Those are the folks who are paying for PTA. Those are the folks who are paying for Little League. Those are the folks who are contributing to the local churches. Those are the folks who are out planting trees. And so House Bill 3123 is just an incremental step in helping small business owners. Now, I want you to know, when you talk about business incubators, everyone has a different definition of what a business incubator is. And I think that's good, because every community has a different need. Every Main Street has a different need. And any time that we can assist a community in a collaborative effort to help small business, we ought to. Now, we need to keep in mind that the state of Oregon cannot create jobs. The state of Oregon should not be in the business of subsidizing private industry. But if the state of Oregon can serve as a catalyst to help small business grow, we ought to try and do that. And I think these business incubator centers are a way to do that. In front of you is a concept called Grow Oregon. Some of you may have heard of this. For some of you, this may be new. What you're looking at is a bipartisan, bi-chamber approach to economic development in the state of Oregon. Senator Betsy Johnson and I, with the help of Chair Lim and with the help of Representative Abakian and Representative Richardson, Senator Morris, Senator Verger, have come together and have put together this concept. It also is the collaboration of a lot of different folks in this building, including the counties, the cities, the ports, the special districts, NFIB, the Oregon Restaurant Association, the Oregon Bankers Association, and the realtors. We're still trying to, and the Oregon Rural Electric Co-ops. We're still trying to reach out to the rest, but time is limited. I envision our business incubator centers serving as a location where economic development as defined by the community can occur. One of the things we want to do is we want to try and make the loan programs more relevant to small business owners and try and get them out onto Main Street. So access to capital to small business owners isn't occurring in some big marble building in Salem, but is occurring down the street in collaboration with their local lender. These business incubators potentially could serve as a tool to make that happen. Currently, we have three different agencies all titled Women, Minority, and Emerging Small Business. Three that we fund in this building. One is located in Consumer and Business Services. One is located in Economic and Community Development. One's located in the Governor's Office. I'd ask you if any of you know those three. What I would suggest is that we bring the three together and brand, rather than having three different agencies with the same name doing different functions, we bring them together, and perhaps there's an opportunity for these business incubators to step up and partner with women, minority, and emerging small business and serve a greater role in making sure that all Oregonians have an opportunity to do business with the state of Oregon and with local government. Because the fact is, every Oregonian has a right to do business with the state of Oregon, not just those who know how to find Salem and know how to get to the right floor and to get to the right person to do business. If you'll take a look under community development, we have what's called a Community Development Institute. What we envision there is creating an opportunity for our small communities, our small towns, our small ports, our small nonprofit corporations, even our small for-profit companies, to come together for a couple days and learn about economic development in the state of Oregon. How does it work? What are the programs? What are the rules? What are the regulations? How do you conduct a public meeting? How do you go to a vote of the citizenry if you're going to do a special public works project, if you're going to undertake trying to recruit a business? These incubator centers potentially could serve as collaborators at some point in helping a community who's getting ready to undertake a special public works program or a water wastewater program to work with them, perhaps even use a little bit of space while they're undertaking that project. If you look into recruitment, one of the pieces there is enterprise zone management. Set aside the politics of enterprise zone management. Someone has to manage it if a community has an enterprise zone. Perhaps the business incubator centers could serve as another collaborator in trying to make this happen. What I would ask the committee to do, and I know today is just a public hearing, but is to hopefully take House Bill 3123 to a work session, pass it, send it down to Ways and Means, and let us continue to work with it as we try and put together the concept of Grow Oregon. So I truly appreciate the opportunity to be here. Chair Lim, I truly appreciate your leadership, the work you're doing in supporting small business, not only here in Oregon, but making sure that small business has an opportunity to participate in international opportunities is greatly appreciated and is very noted.
Thank you very much, and I do appreciate your leadership in this area, and that would be very helpful for us to understand. Okay. Representative Dellum?
If I may go back to David and ask, with the seven centers in Washington, and how many of those are located in rural Washington?
More than half are located in rural areas. I know the Aberdeen, Washington, the Spokane, Washington. I believe there's one in north central Washington as well, which serves small business in rural areas. Tacoma serves principally small businesses, as I said, in construction between Bellingham and Olympia, mostly because it's literally on I-5, so that small business contractors can come and go from the freeway. But I believe that the Olympic Peninsula is served primarily by the Small Business Incubator in Aberdeen. And I will furnish you with a list of and a description of each of the seven business incubators in Washington State, who they serve, when they were started, whatever background we can get. I'll have that to you as soon as we can get that. They have formed a trade organization called WASB, the Washington State Business Incubator Association. So they actually are together. They have annual meetings. Tim Strege is the president of that organization. He's the manager of the William Factory Incubator in Tacoma.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Representative Smith, you know, of course, I'm very supportive of this program. I'm wondering if you think the money that would be usable from the state would come from the bank of the Trade and Economic Community Development Department?
Well, very good question, Chair Lim, Representative Nelson. the financing on this is unsure at this time. What I would share with you is send this down to Ways and Means. You come sit down there with us, and let's work through this. What I'm most interested in is the concept of having the ability to direct the department to work with our local communities in developing these collaborations as they make sense. Now, in terms of placing the money there, that's going to require a bipartisan, bi-chamber agreement. And we would strongly encourage each and every one of you, and we'd send you a notice on House Bill 3123, should you send it down there, to come down there and sit right up there with us, and let's walk through this together and make sure it works.
Can I follow up, please?
One follow-up.
My last question is, would you consider adding transportation? Because without it, we can grow Oregon, but if we can't move the product or services, and we have ports, but we don't have an intermodal transportation system.
Chair Lim, Representative Nelson, you're exactly right. There's two other areas. One is workforce. And the other is land use and regulation related to that. Unfortunately, the scope of my little world is economic development, and we're just trying to tackle that right now. Perhaps in a future session, we can be here together and try and tackle transportation. So.
All right. Chair Mulkey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Smith, the bill that we have before us is for adopting criteria, which seems a very useful project, but not one that takes any money. Why not send this directly to the floor?
Very good question, Chair Lim, Vice Chair Merkley. When Representative Hansen brought this concept to me, it was with the understanding that we would try and integrate it with this overall concept of Grow Oregon. And so because we're working in a bipartisan, bi-chamber approach to economic development, I think we need to make sure that all pieces come together and work together. And that's why I'd invite all of you to come down and sit down there with us to make sure it works, to make sure when we're putting the final budget together for economic development, this piece fits in the way it's supposed to. I'd hate to have this moving on in the event that we need to tweak it and to make it fit with the direction we're trying to move. So, and that was the understanding with Representative Hansen when I agreed to sign on to this.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you should know that this bill, when it's have a work session passed out, is subsequently referred to the Ways and Means.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yes, it
okay.
does. So. Okay. All right, and if there's no questions, then thank you very much for coming and testifying. Appreciate it, Representative.
I would hope, Chair Lim, as we move the dollars around on Grow Oregon, that you'll invite us back and that we can come and present it to you folks and let you folks cut through it and let us know what we need to be modifying and make it an approach that works for all of us. I can truly share with you that economic development has to work for every single one of us in this room or it's not going to work. And that's truly the approach we're taking this session. So thank you.
I just want to comment that the Representative Smith has been working with me several months on this issue and always consulting, discussing, and then working together. I truly appreciate the spirit of cooperation, which is very important. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members.
I'd like to call at this time Ron Fox from the Oregon Community Development. Ron, welcome.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity. I just have a few comments that I would like to share with you regarding House Bill 3123. For the record, my name is Ron Fox. I'm the manager of the Business Development Division for the Oregon Economic Community Development Department. First of all, I would say that the department is very much in support of the general concepts of business incubators. We do have some comments that we'd like to share with you and some additional information that I think will help you sort of put this concept in perspective as it relates to Oregon. Really, the department has been engaged with a number of small business incubators that have existed in Oregon or currently do exist in Oregon. There has been a business incubator in the Corvallis area for many years. It operated out of a facility that was previously owned by Pacific Power and Light but was then subleased to the Business Enterprise Center, which was the Corvallis Center's name. Subsequent to a lease termination, they are currently seeking a new physical location to maintain that center. That center has been responsible for a number of business creations and evolutions out of the center, and has been particularly supportive of the university and university research concepts that obviously are important to Oregon. Business incubators have been, as Mr. Bloom and Representative Smith mentioned, have been a tool used to create business and business opportunities around the nation for a number of years. They generally fall into two principal categories: incubators without walls and incubators with walls. And let me just describe a little bit in that context. Incubators with walls are more like the model that Mr. Blum mentioned, in that they have physical assets. They provide physical space for businesses to begin their life as a small business. They generally also provide the type of business assistance services that small businesses need in terms of management, accounting, marketing skills. The other things that are obviously essential for a small business to get started, get a market opportunity, and be successful. The other category is incubators without walls, and at this, that obviously is the same level of business counseling, business assistance service, but without the physical space where the business actually resides in a physical building. At this point, I would say I think the Oregon Small Business Development Center and the network of 19 centers around the state really do operate like a business incubator without walls. Each of those centers provides a similar type of counseling, business advice, accounting support in terms of counseling that many of the incubator systems also provide. Also, incubators, the ones that I have been familiar with that have had a successful run have generally had a special niche that has made them successful. I think Mr. Bloom mentioned the one in Washington that is focused on the construction industry. They've aggregated that group of businesses, and they are able to share information and insights. There actually are a couple of incubators currently operating in Oregon. One has operated for a number of years, and it's operated by the Oregon Association for Minority Entrepreneurs. If you are familiar with ONAMI, its acronym, Sam Brooks is it's Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs. They're located in northeast Portland, near Emanuel Hospital. They, again, operate in a physical space. They provide space to small businesses that begin their business life there. They also provide an array of business support services, as mentioned by Mr. Blum. They also, sort of one of the unique aspects, they also have a commercial kitchen that they have placed inside of their building, which permits some of the businesses there to actually utilize an inspected, certified kitchen for their business. Actually, they have some that are producing various food products and so on. In order to be able to produce your food products, you have to be able to do that in a certified kitchen. So that example. Sam Brooks is, I know, a member of the National Association of Business Incubators, and I would say would be an excellent resource to the committee. I know he's here today as a part of the Small Business Day, but he would be an excellent reference for the committee because he and ONAMI have operated an incubator for some period of time. Another center that I'm familiar with is one that operates in Sandpoint, Idaho. They built an incubator using Federal Economic Development Administration grant funds and local jurisdiction resources. It's operated for a number of years, and again, its special unique aspect is that it also has a commercial kitchen built into the incubator center. Sandpoint, Idaho, believe it or not, has a very robust berry production in that area, and a lot of small businesses use that commercial kitchen as the way they can produce their specialty food products. And again, they also receive business assistance counseling in that area. The city of Beaverton recently opened a new business incubator. Their business incubator is oriented to the newly developing area of software development called open source. If you're familiar with Linus Torvald in the Oregon Open Source Development Lab, they are orienting their services to small startup businesses who are moving into this area of open source software development. That center doesn't have a record. It's just began just a few months ago, so they're just beginning that effort. So generally, again, I think the department is very supportive of incubators. It's important for incubators to have both a source of funding for their physical space, but it's also extremely important that they have a plan and a source for ongoing revenues to support the operations and services that they provide to small businesses that begin their life in an incubator environment and then move out of those environments into the open market and, as Representative Nelson said, eventually all hopefully become profitable and create additional jobs. So, with that, I'll answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ron, thank you. Could you tell me, are there funds available in the... I already see Mike shaking his head like this. but I thought we did have some $10 million left over this year.
Chairman Lim, Representative Nelson, I think one of the concerns we have, and I think it was alluded to in Representative Smith's comments, is that this, by creating an expectation or a criteria for funding, it places even more demands on the limited funding the department has and receives. One of the possible sources for Oregon incubators to receive financial assistance is through the regional rural investment funds. Those monies are allocated to the department, but then are subsequently allocated on a economic distress population factor to regions across the state. Regional investment boards representing counties and cities develop business investment plans. Those plans are directed to create jobs or retain jobs, and those funds then could be allocated to support business incubators or other initiatives that the local regional investment boards deem to be important in their communities. In the governor's recommended budget, the regional rural investment fund is pegged at, I believe, $10.5 million for this biennium.
Okay. Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fox, is that interest-free money? If I were a tenant in this incubator,
Chairman Lim, Representative Nelson, I think that question would depend upon the operating model created by each individual business incubator. I think, as Mr. Blum mentioned, some of the centers ask their tenants to pay at market rates, which would be comparable price per square foot for a comparable space in the open market. Other centers provide a slight discount from market rates for the space that they lease, and others actually provide free space for, and it varies from incubator to incubator as to how they develop their plan. Some of them offer the first 6 months as free rent and then a graduated increase up to market. And many centers actually have a required exit date. In other words, a startup business can only reside in the center for a prescribed period of time, 1 year, 2 years, some period of time in which they need to then be capable of standing on their own and sort of entering the open market in terms of business costs and things of that nature. So it varies from center depending on how they develop their business plan.
Representative Dallam.
You referred to incubators with walls and incubators without walls. When we talked, we had the community college people in, and they talked about the things they were doing. Would they qualify as an incubator without walls?
Chairman Lim, Representative Dallam, I think small business development centers are, in fact, business incubators generally without walls. I'm not familiar of any of the 19 centers that actually have physical space that they make available to a business. But essentially, the small business development centers are providing counseling on accounting procedures. They generally do not do the accounting for a business, but they provide the type of accounting assistance necessary. They provide marketing assistance. They don't do the marketing, but they provide the assistance to that. So, as I say, I think in a broad definition of incubators without walls, I think Oregon's network of small business centers are, in fact, at least Oregon's version of an incubators without walls. The type of clients that they serve range from aspiring entrepreneurs, someone with a business idea that needs the kind of counseling and business direction that is necessary to begin life as a small business. They also support existing small businesses that are at points of either financial distress or at a critical juncture of growth and expansion where they, you know, they may be operating at 3 to 5 employees but have an opportunity in their market niche to grow to be much larger. And I think, you know, it's that growth that really, as Representative Smith mentioned earlier, it's that growth out of Oregon's small business that really does drive a substantial part of our state's economy. I'm not sure that small business centers advertise themselves as incubators without walls, but there's not a lot of difference between a small business center and an incubator without walls, other than maybe the intense personal service or the actual services that are delivered from some incubator centers.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, and there might be some overlapping areas, such as a small business center. And already you mentioned several incubating centers already existed. How are the plans working together when this bill passes, when this new incubator exists?
Chairman Lim, members of the committee, well, I think with the passage of House Bill 3123, what as it is currently drafted, would direct us to develop criteria for how we would provide financial assistance. The bill, as currently drafted, does not provide for any additional financial resources that we could then direct to those centers that met those basic criteria. I think Mr. Bloom actually alluded to that in Washington, the evolution of their incubator program was something that happened over a period of years. Initially, with a focus or direction to their state's economic endeavors, and then in subsequent legislative sessions, funding was provided that actually created the funding stream that supports those. I must say that I am not familiar with the 7 centers in Washington and how their funding is arranged through the State Department there. And I'm sure we could work together with this and get that information to you.
Yes, we'd like to find out more information how the Washington State operates, and then how do they oversee the operation of that, and also I'd like to have some information the current our state incubating systems, how do they work, and I'd like to have all those information so we can find out all the information to find out the best solution for this problem.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we'll do that, and I will also particularly pursue Sam Brooks. Sam is a member of the National Association for Business Incubators and is oftentimes my best resource in terms of what are the newest trends and best practices that are going on across the United States in the area of business incubators. I also am sure that upon your invitation, Sam would be more than happy to come and tell you a great deal about his experience operating a business incubator. That incubator I know has been in operation since at least the late 80s in Northeast Portland and has a long history of successful small business alumni that have emerged from the center and gone on to be successful businesses in that area.
Okay. This Representative Smith gave us the copy Grow Oregon program. How this program is going to fit into this bill? Do you know?
Chairman Lim, I might defer that answer to Representative Smith. I think small business centers and business incubators are generally conceived as part of a grow small business initiative. Our small business endeavors from the department are primarily oriented to the small business development centers, the existing network of that we have, as I mentioned earlier, invested our resources and services to incubators that have or currently exist in Oregon. So I would really defer to Representative Smith for that.
Okay.
Answer.
And the bill, House Bill 3123, currently as it's written, do you think it's good enough? Do we need some amendment in it at all?
Chairman Lim, members of the committee, well, I think the bill as written gives sufficient direction to the department to develop the criteria for how funds from the department's resources might be invested in business incubators. Again, as I said before, I think the challenge is creates a funding expectation, and then it's a question of how do we allocate our funds within the department, you know, maintaining the established funding that we have for other initiatives, small business centers, the assistance on lean manufacturing, and a number of other initiatives that are specifically oriented to support Oregon small business.
So. Okay. Any other questions? If not, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Let me see. Representative Smith, do you have anything to share more?
I'm here to testify on behalf of another bill.
Another bill, okay. I'll make sure.
Much better than the one I brought for.
Okay. And with that, and if there's any person like to testify on House Bill 3123, if not, we will close the public hearing, House Bill 3123, and then we are going to open House Bill 3144 for public hearing.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3144 allows corporations operating emerging businesses to defer corporate excise and personal income taxes.
All right. And who is going to this? This one?
Yeah.
Okay. And Representative Brune.
Thank you.
And Representative Greg Smith. And okay, why don't I invite also the Harvey Matthews also from AOI. Let you figure out who's going to speak first.
I'll go ahead and start since it's mine.
All right. Welcome.
Okay. Equipment. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Committee. For the record, my name is Representative Scott Bruin. I am the State Representative from House District 37, and thank you for hearing this today. Some testimony is being passed around, and I'll refer to that in my comments. I'm here in support of House Bill 3144. Let me give some background. Historically, Oregon has been a state which has provided a balance of business large and small. Today, however, the balance has shifted. While Oregon still enjoys the benefits of wonderful large businesses like Intel and Nike and Monaco Coach and Oregon Steel, there is little doubt, I think, that Oregon is no longer a mecca for Fortune 500 companies. For various reasons, headquarters for Fortune 500 companies like U.S. Bank, Willamette Industries, and First Interstate Bank have left the state, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think they'll be back. Yet even with this shift, Oregon remains a relatively healthy place to start and grow a small business. House Bill 3144 is designed to make Oregon even healthier for small business. Further, I am confident that if House Bill 3144 is marketed and executed well, Oregon may well become the best place, let me say that again, the best place in the nation to start and build a small business. Real briefly, what House Bill 3144 does would allow a small company, and I've defined small company as a company that has annual revenues of $3.5 million or less, allows that small company to defer a portion of its state income and excise taxes, a maximum amount amount of $200,000 or 80% of the net income of that company, taxable net income of that company, whichever is less. It allows them to defer that tax payment for 2 years, then pay it back to the state with interest at prime fully floating over 4 years. In my opinion, this bill will help provide a young and growing small business with the critical working capital at exactly the time when it needs it the most. This bill will also provide working capital exactly the time it is most difficult for a small business to acquire it, when it is young, consuming cash, creating jobs, and growing, but has not yet built the net worth or equity or sufficient collateral. Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, I spent over 10 years in commercial banking. I lent to small, medium, and large businesses. In every case, those firms I lent to had to have sufficient collateral for security, proper equity capitalization, a personal guarantee from a high net worth owner, and a multi-year track record and a good product and service and a good business plan. All too often, a growing business has only a good idea. As anyone who knows anything about banking can tell you, a good idea is simply not enough to get a reasonably priced operating loan. Often, the only capital that these new, young, small businesses can access is through a high-rate 18-20% credit card. It's not a good way to capitalize a business. House Bill 3144 will help a small growing business by allowing it to access its own capital. It will allow a small business to keep a larger portion of its own capital and its own earnings to use for its own growth and development. Members of the committee, this bill is not designed to help the Nikes and the Intels of the world. It is designed to help the startup biotech company, the startup high-tech company, the startup life sciences company coming out of OHSU, or for that matter, as Representative Smith mentioned earlier, the dry cleaner or the restaurant or the print shop that's just around the corner. I just want to tell a personal story on this that I think drives home the importance of this. Last summer, some of you may have seen this, there was a big billboard as you're coming into downtown Portland. If you're coming on Barber Boulevard heading north into Portland, there's a YMCA there that many of you are familiar with, and there was a big billboard on the side of the building there. And the big white billboard had a big guy with a California state shirt across his chest, just the bear and the flag. And it didn't say California has a great environment, has great beaches and all that, although we know that's all true. Wonderful people, we know that's all true. What the billboard simply said, and it was ironic that this was in Portland, is California wants your business. And of course, the person on the billboard was a big smiling Arnold Schwarzenegger. I thought, how apt to get straight to the point. Don't mess around with the little cultural things. Those are important, but what we need to be focused on right now is creating small business. California has it right. We obviously don't have the personality, the cult of personality, or the star power to compete with a billboard with their governor. But I'm convinced that this bill is a good step to put our money where our mouth is, to say, yeah, we not only can be, but we want to be the strongest environment for small business in the nation, and I think that this bill does that. College, small business creates jobs here in Oregon. Help all of us support Oregon small business by supporting this bill. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Okay, always. Representative Nelson has a question.
Go ahead. Well, no, you haven't been here.
Will we need to wait until the full panel, Mr. Chair, or should we ask questions of Representative Bruno?
Okay, I think while the question is brewing, it's good to ask now before you forget it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bruno, in the bill, I'm looking at Section 2.1c. The business operations of the corporation have existed for less than 5 years. This would mean that there's a business in operation for 4 years that could, at that point, being a tax-paying business, being an operable business, now say we want to defer our taxes for 2 years under this plan. I'm playing worst-case scenario here. So they defer taxes for two years, go out of business, take their business elsewhere. The state is out that money.
Mr. Chair, Representative Buckley, first of all, it has to be, you know, the two scenarios, one going out of business,
right,
and two leaving the state or deciding not to be in business. The first scenario, going out of business, yeah, that's a high risk. I mean, as Representative Smith alluded to earlier on a different bill, small businesses are the highest. That's, once again, goes back to why they can't get a bank loan.
Right.
There's just no track record. But we know, especially in Oregon, that we have an innovative economy. We have a lot of great ideas. In my particular district, we have a lot of home home-based businesses, lots of home-based businesses, all good ideas, some without sufficient capital. So that's the idea behind this. But to your point, first of all, a company has to be a success by definition to even be able to access what this bill would do. They have to be profitable. It can't be a small business that's losing money. I mean, there may be some help that we can provide there, and I think other things we talk about. This has to be a company that is already making money, or it wouldn't qualify to defer its profits, if you will. As far as leaving the state, part of what this bill does, if you're worried about the state not getting paid back, what this bill would do is, if you do qualify, and it's not automatic, at least that's my intent with this bill, it's not automatic that if you qualify, you get this. Right. You have to apply for this. And I'm hoping that the application process won't be too difficult, but it's not automatic. There has to be some affirmative action on the part of the business to make this happen. There's a tax lien that's put in place. Okay, so if a company leaves the state in year 5 or 6 or, you know, whatever the scenario may be, we still have a tax lien. We're going to get paid. So hopefully that addresses your
point. Thank you.
Okay, and Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of course, I'm supportive of this bill. I'm just curious, this is only for-profit businesses, is that right, Representative Bruin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, that's correct.
And do you have the reason that you set this 3.5?
Yeah, the best way I can explain that is anecdotally.
It's a lot.
The best way I can explain that is anecdotally, and I'm not set on 3.5. It could be 3 million. It could be 10 million. I know, and we've had discussion here at our committee, Mr. Chair, that the state defines small business differently than I define small business. The state defines small business as a factor of number of employees. I think it's 500 for a manufacturing company, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Chair, and I think it's 250 for something, or 200 for a company that's not a manufacturing company. To me, that's big business. Once again, I've spent years, over a decade in commercial banking, and bankers, and I think most private industry define small business much differently. We define it as how much revenue comes in the door. To me, that 3.5 million, it's not a magic number, but it's my experience, if you will, spending 10 years of banking, to sort of see the transition between what I would call a real small company and a medium small company. Once again, we could debate whether it's 2.5 million or 5 million or any other number. 3.5 million is the number I came to. No magic science how I got there, other than my own experience as a banker spending over 10 years in banking.
A follow-up. So I'm wondering if we might say something like, since we have the 5 years or 4 years, I guess we'd say something like has operated profitably for 4 years and not have the huge requirement. This reminds me of the, you know, $80,000 income requirement on, you know, farmland. I mean, some of these, it's hard to get to 3.5, and I think what this bill does, it allows companies that have been, stable now for 4 years, even though making, not growing hugely, to now to expand and, grow Oregon, like Representative Smith said. So I'm wondering if we might just say operated profitably for 4 years.
And Mr. Chair?
And have some type of oversight committee.
I had to make sure I understand the question. I guess, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, what you're asking is that we remove the 3.5 maximum level. I guess my only concern with that, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, would be this is designed for new small business, and I don't. The point behind this is a company that's been around many, many years and is well established and is profitable and has higher revenue levels probably doesn't need this, because that company can go see my former colleagues and get a working capital bank loan.
I see.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding your question, though.
Representative
Dallum. I want to pursue that capitalization just a little bit, if I could, Representative Brun. Haven't these, the kind of companies we're talking about, they are already leveraged through a lending institution, generally speaking?
Generally speaking, they're not leveraged through what I would consider a standard banking institution. Once again, every scenario is going to be unique, and there's certainly people, businessmen and women, who come to the table that from whatever prior life or current life have high net worth. Maybe they're acquiring a company that already has a track record, has collateral, has security. That's not really what we're talking about here, because once again, that company, that entity can go get a bank loan and get competitive prime-based financing. This is primarily designed for somebody who is working out of the garage because he or she had a great idea how to make a new, you know, I hate to say widget, but, you know, some new machine part that they somehow acquire an old piece of equipment, they can do it in their garage. They don't have security. They don't have collateral. The person doesn't have high net worth. He's like the rest of us, just normal. Doesn't come to the bank or doesn't come to the table with millions of dollars. And probably because he doesn't have a track record, doesn't have collateral, can't get a standard bank loan. That person has to have finance. Every company has to have working capital to operate. That person, and he'll find it, but that person likely is going to find it via a 18 or 19 or 20% business credit card. A lot of businesses do that. A lot of businesses operate successfully with that because they have no alternative. My point is, we know that small business is where jobs are created in Oregon. We know that small businesses have a difficult time accessing capital, and we know that the failure rate of small businesses is high, among other reasons, because they cannot access well-priced working capital. Once again, that's what this bill is designed to help. The small startup company that is profitable, it has to be a real business. It can't just be a fly-by-night thing that has never achieved any level of success, but that may not have all those resources in place that a company that's been around for 5, 10, 20 years will have in place.
Thank you very much.
Representative Riley, and after that, we'll move on to the next president.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Riley. Representative Bruin, I guess I'm just a little confused because we're looking at profitable businesses and who are already in operation, and we're talking about giving them a tax deferral, and it seems to me, just I'm missing something, because it seems to me that these particular businesses can get that much of a loan almost anywhere, the amount of taxes that we would defer. I mean, if they're already profitable, there are lots of places that they'll give these folks loans.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative Riley, once again, I'm basing this on my experience spending 10 years in banking, over 10 years in banking. And it is my experience, without any hesitation, to say that great idea that some home-based business in my district or some other good idea, and we got them, and unfortunately we had to reject them. And we weren't we were an average. You know, my banking experiences were average. They weren't, we weren't a particularly hard bank to lend with or an easy bank to lend with, right in the middle. Those businesses cannot go get standard financing.
But we're not talking about a company with an idea. We're talking about a company with profits.
Right.
And that's a totally different idea to me.
Mr. Chair, we get into a real, Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, we get into a question of profits versus cash flow. A company can show profits and be upside down when it comes to cash flow, because cash flow is a factor of a bunch of things, but not the least of which is a factor of growth. If a company isn't growing very well, it's growing only slightly, it'll turn out more cash flow. It doesn't have to finance its receivables to the high degree. It doesn't have to finance its inventory to the high degree, and it will be able to use more of that cash flow to internally fund, if you will, its own operations. If a company is on a growth path like this, could be profitable as anything, but it doesn't have any money because it's using all that internally generated cash flow to finance its own assets.
Right, that was a piece I was missing. Thank you.
And that's once again where a bank looks at two things. And one of the things I didn't mention in my remarks, among all these other factors that a bank looks at, it looks at cash flow, probably number one above anything else.
Sure.
And that's where this fast growing. If it's not growing, the cash flow, it's almost sort of contrary. Almost sort of contrarian thinking, you're thinking that a profitable company would have lots of available cash. It's usually, if it's profitable and growing, it's usually the exact opposite. It's when it needs cash the most.
Right. That's a piece. Thank you very much.
All right. And Representative Smith, and we might have some answers, some of the questions that you might have through the testimonies coming forth. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lim. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Oregon State Representative. I represent District 57, which includes Union, Wallowa, Morrow, and Umatilla counties. I have three initial contentions with House Bill 3144, at least with the presentation. The first one is I disagree that we don't have the muscle to have our own billboard. I think Senator or Representative Nelson will look very good on the state border, letting folks know that Oregon wants their business.
I concur there.
Second contention is the fact that I'm not listed as a sponsor on House Bill 3144. And the second is this should be a bipartisan, bi-chamber issue. About 45 minutes earlier, I was before you with Grow Oregon, and I have to share with you something very quick. If you want to stimulate Oregon's economy and help small business, go to 3144. Let me tell you, this will do more for the state's economy in helping that small business owner get off the ground and get moving in those first 5 years than anything offered here. I want you to know, in my real life, I have a small little business with a handful of employees, but I have a client base of about 316 clients that I work with. And over the last 20 months, I've helped start 40 brand new startup companies in Northeast Oregon. I have 40 startups. Every one of them is in business. Every one of them is growing. And aside from helping them with the technical assistance to learn how to manage cash flow, learn how to take care of that customer service, learn how to, you know, take that idea and put it into reality, helping businesses maintain a little bit of cash to grow is the next best thing we can do, or probably the best thing. I want to point out one thing, and then I have to get back downstairs. This isn't for the fly-by-night business. If you go and you read Section 2 of this, Line 23, anyone who's going to get a deferral is going to have a lien against their real and personal property. These are the folks who are serious about doing business in Oregon. These are the folks who are willing to sign on the bottom line, who are willing to put their life on the line, their kids' education on the line, their home on the line, everything. Because let me tell you, Department of Revenue and the IRS don't mess around. Granted, this doesn't apply to the IRS. Oregon Department of Revenue, they don't mess around when it's time to collect. And so if an entrepreneur in the state of Oregon believes enough in himself, enough in his business, enough in his future to put his home, his personal property on the line, I think that says something. I can share with you as we work through some of the other funding programs related to economic development, I don't think we could say that about some of them. So I fully support House Bill 3144. What a fabulous idea. I hope this will be worked in a bipartisan, bi-chamber manner. Mr. Vice Chair, I hope you'll come down and share this with our Ways and Means Committee, because I know there's a couple folks on there who would also like to sign on. With that, I know that's emotional testimony, not factual testimony, but this is a good bill.
Representative Riley.
Yeah, just one comment, one question. As I read line 24, line 23, we're only talking about corporate property, not actual personal property. But nobody's putting their home on the line. This is a corporation.
Well, I would share with you really quick, the Oregon Department of Revenue doesn't distinguish when you have debt. Chances are with a corporation, you're signing personal guarantees with leasing companies, with vendors, with your commercial lender. And I'm willing to bet the Oregon Department of Revenue is going to hold to the same standard of making sure that you're signing on the line.
Thank you.
All right.
Anyway, have a great day.
I'd like to ask Representative Bruno or Representative Smith. I guess I'll direct it to you, Representative Smith. Of the 40 businesses that you've helped get going, these people would be in a position to, this is not a loan, we're going to be a partner with them, and they're going to repay this money. Of these 40 businesses, how much new revenue will we be generating because they're there now?
tremendous. I don't know the answer. I mean, that's a revenue question. What I can share with you is if we can help these businesses who are committed to their business get through that initial growth cycle, they're going to be in business for a while. It's getting past that initial cycle. And as the good vice chair was mentioning, in business, as most of you know, cash is king.
That's right.
And cash flow is its partner. And if we can help a business manage that cash flow by a committed business owner, I don't know what else we could do to help stimulate this economy. I think this is fabulous. It's great, Bill.
All right, that's one question. Representative Smith, before you go.
Yes.
I have. I want to make sure, are you willing to sacrifice UR Bill 3123 in favor of 3144?
I will sacrifice it in a minute.
Wow.
This is a good piece of legislation. We're here to help small business in the state of Oregon, and I was very sincere in my comments earlier. If there's a better way to help small business, I'm open to it, and I want you to come down and share it with me or invite me up here to learn.
Okay. No. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
All right. And next, Harvey Matthew. At the same time, I'd like to call at this time the Tim Martinez. Why don't you go ahead, Harvey.
Chairman Lim,
yeah.
Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Harvey Matthews with Associated Oregon Industries. We have over 23,000 Oregon business members, and those members reflect Oregon's business community. 98% of our members have 50 employees or less. And as we are celebrating Small Business Day and looking at House Bill 3144, which directly affects small business, I think that's important to point out. Currently, although our economy and our economic future here in Oregon relies heavily on innovation, we have some problems that are very relevant to that. Oregon receives less than the U.S. average in small business innovation research awards. Oregon ranks 29th in the United States in the number of tech company births, according to U.S. Department of Commerce. And Oregon universities are not creating spin-off companies in relation to our fellow universities. OSU, U of O, and OHSU in 2002 combined to create only 11 spin-off companies, whereas University of Washington in that same year created 42. So although our economy relies heavily on innovation, from natural resource to high-tech companies, we don't have the policies in place that encourage these innovative startup companies. We have made some improvements. We have some investment policies that were put into place in 2003, the Oregon Investment Fund and Oregon Investment Council policies do get more of our capital going towards venture capital, hopefully directed towards these types of small startup companies. We have some regulatory policies that many of you are working on, trying to streamline that process that often hampers our young businesses. And we have tax policies that many of you are working on, whether it be the R&D tax credit or capital gains tax reduction. These are all important. But House Bill 3144 with the -1 amendments, I think, is something unique and special. And I remember when Scott Byrne, not then representative, when he came and shared his ideas with us when he was running for office, he was one of the few representatives that came in with something I thought was an original idea that really would spark jobs and economic growth in our state. And it was just this idea, and I commend him for sticking with it and bringing it forward. It encourages the growth of small businesses. Simply deferring that tax burden, it doesn't eliminate it. It gives those fledgling businesses, as we've heard, an opportunity to develop, and it is good PR. Oregon wants to encourage new businesses, and aside from a billboard type of scenario, I think the word of mouth going throughout the United States that, wow, you know, Oregon has stepped up and done something unique protecting our small businesses from some of the cash flow problems. I think that's significant. And I'll end with a story that was alluded to by Representative Brune. About 40 years ago, a startup company began in the garage of a partner's home. They had an innovative idea. They couldn't get regular bank financing. They didn't get any help from their university, their city, their startup. There was no help for them, and they survived on a shoestring, pardon the pun. But they were lucky enough to get financial backing from a Japanese bank. And that was by luck, by chance, by good fortune, but they're the reason why we have Nike as our only headquartered Fortune 500 company here today. If Oregon's going to grow the next Nike, we shouldn't have to depend on luck. We need good policy, and House Bill 3144 is good fiscal policy that grows in innovative businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. And we will move on to the next, Tim Martinez. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association. I, too, would like to commend Representative Brune for this Bill 3144. The bankers are supportive of this legislation. Representative Brune has done a good job explaining his background in banking, and we value him as an individual in legislature that understands banking and economic development. We believe this bill will make a difference, will help grow small business, grow Oregon's economy. We read in the paper this week that the unemployment rate seems to be falling, finally, and we think this would add to Oregon's growth in the future. I think it's important to point out, and others have, but I also want to get on the record, that this is simply a deferral, and it is not something where you're asking for a new tax credit or anything else. So the money will be paid back, assuming these businesses are profitable. So, again, the bankers are very supportive of this and would be happy to help in any way to move it through the process.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Riley?
Not a question, but a comment. I've been throwing as tough a questions as I could, but I just want to say I think this is a good bill, and I'm also recognizing your ability to bring this forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Listen, I'm very impressed with this bill. It's very innovative. I'm wondering, the credit unions, have discussed this with the credit unions, how that might impact. And I'm glad to hear from the bankers, but have you talked about this with the credit unions?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have, Mr. Chair, Representative Buckley, that's a wonderful question, and no, I haven't, and I'm remiss for doing so, and you've actually prompted me to think about that. As far as I know, credit unions, when they lend, have similar, I haven't spent any time in a credit union, it's already mentioned, a lot of time in commercial banking, and I don't think that the standards for commercial lending, and maybe Mr. Martinez can follow up on this more than I can, I don't think that the structure for commercial lending are significantly different from commercial banks. I know that sometimes they don't lend to those markets.
Right.
They don't choose to compete with commercial banks. But I think in the situations where they do, the lending standards, lending practices are not dissimilar. And that's sort of a squishy answer. To your first point, I will call Pam Levitt this afternoon.
She just walked into the room.
What timing? That's pretty impressive. One follow-up.
Watching TV somewhere.
One follow-up. Mr. Chair, one follow-up, please.
Yes, follow-up.
Thank you very much. Do you have an estimate of how many Oregon companies would be eligible, even a rough estimate at this point, if this bill was passed?
I don't, and that's a great question. That's a matter of homework. Once again, and I was going to allude to in the last comments, Mr. Chair, Representative Buckley, is this bill actually came before us a little earlier than I thought it was going to. So, in fact, you'll notice in my testimony there's several typos and misspellings, and that's a factor of that as well. So I will definitely get that number for you and share it with the committee.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. And I have one question. There might be some company already existed and a new company coming in with the same type of business. And one company tax has been deferred, other companies continue to pay their taxes, even though they are struggling, so their cash strip. How do you, what is your comment on that?
Mr. Chair, I knew somebody was going to ask that question.
That
question was raised even by AOI when I met with them last summer to talk about that. I don't have a perfect answer for that, honestly, other than to say that if a company has existed more than 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, whatever the case, they're going to have so many other things that the new company doesn't have that I think it's fair. And once again, and the point's been mentioned numerous times, Mr. Chair, we're not giving these companies anything except the ability to defer taxes for a couple of years. We're not, and they're paying for it. It's not free capital. We're having them pay, if you will, a market-based interest rate on that capital. So it's not free capital. It has a cost. Once again, we're not requiring, if this were to be implemented, not requiring, it's not an automatic giveaway to a company that qualifies. They have to apply for it, and there's some serious, as Representative Smith alluded to, there's some serious ties to it, not the least of which are the tax liens. So I understand your point. I think it's a real issue. I don't have a perfect answer for it other than to say that a company that's been around a longer time has a lot more going for it as far as the resources it can access than a new startup young company can.
Okay, one more question. I heard this is a brand new original idea come from you, but do you know any other state doing the same thing?
I'm aware of no other state that's doing this, Mr. Chairman.
So
that's not to say it's not. I just have not heard.
Okay.
Another state is doing it.
Representative Riley.
Mr. Chair, I would just suggest I would like to hear from the credit union since Penn was watching on TV and rushed up here to help us.
That's a good thing. Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Pam Levitt with the Credit Union Association of Oregon. I was in the library watching it on TV and was thinking, I need to go talk to Representative Bruin about this bill.
You're welcome.
Happy Small Business Day. Credit unions throughout Oregon have, since the 97 session when we passed legislation to allow credit unions to offer more small business lending, have done a wonderful job. We are making our portfolios for small business lending have increased tremendously. And we're making those 500, 1,000, 100,000 small loans to start-up businesses. It took a while for our credit unions to really get the staff, get the understanding of what business lending was all about. We now feel like many of our members have the expertise. I will say that federally chartered credit unions have been doing small business loans for over 20 years, mostly in more rural areas, the farmer equipment, but now we're more in the urban areas, and I didn't bring any statistics, but it is an area that our members have felt that we've needed to fill a niche that's out there for real small dollar business loans. And we'll take a look at this bill, and certainly I'm sure we can support it.
Okay, well,
so I'm happy to answer any questions.
Most of the issues from the credit union bankers are against each other, but this time you come to agreement to support this bill. That's a good thing.
Absolutely. I think small business issues are important for all of us to come together and support.
All right. Any other questions?
If I can only add, Mr. Chair.
Pardon?
If I can only add one point on that.
Yes, of course.
Once again, this is designed to help the small business survive. Mm-hmm. And the more small businesses that survive, the more clients for credit unions and banks that will be.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I do appreciate it, your time and testimony. And then is there any other person like to testify on House Bill 3144? Hearing none, and we will close the public hearing, House Bill 3144. And since there is no other business, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next meeting will be Wednesday.